Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out. Hi everybody, Aaron Noonan here. Welcome again to the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. It is our 100th episode. We've hit the ton, we've hit the century. Raised the bat. Thank you very much. Great to have you on board with us since 2019. Thank you everyone for your amazing support and listening to all our pods over the course of that time. It's been truly gratifying. Thank you everyone for the feedback too, and keep it coming. Keep the reviews coming. Keep subscribing. Keep sharing our pods with your friends and family. Now, my guest on this 100th episode is a guy who's never driven a race car. Well, he did drive a race car, as you'll hear in this episode, but he's not raced professionally. He's taken photographs of them professionally. I talk of Dirk Kleinsmith, the guy who I've known since I first walked in the door at Motorsport News as a cadet reporter in the late 90s. He's a four-time Motorsport Australia Photographer of the Year, three-time Supercars Media Association Photographer of the Year, and we recorded this sit-down pod with him at Bathurst ahead of the Mount Panorama 500, his last ever event as a professional photographer. He's made the decision to pull up stumps, and so we decided to sit down with him and talk about a career of life through the lens. You'll hear a bunch of stories from his career, times he got in trouble and times that he nailed the best shot. I've got to tell you too, there's this annoying sound through it. It's not me, it's not Dirk. Well, it actually was Dirk. He kept tapping his fingers on the table. I think he was a little bit edgy about sitting down talking about his career. So if you're wondering what that noise is, it was just Dirk tapping his fingers on the table. That's all it was. But the chat, I think you'll agree, is worth having a listen to the tapping on the tables for. A whole pile of tales from a life spent following motor racing around the country for the best part of the last, what, 2.5, 3 decades. So here we go. Buckle up. Time to start episode 100, Dirk Kleinsmith on the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Repco. Well, words need pictures, but sometimes pictures don't need words. I think my guest is going to agree with me on this just quietly. Dirk Kleinsmith, I've known for a very long time. As we record this podcast and put this one out, he has finitoed as a full-time Australian motorsport photographer. I'm not sure he's going to do a Dame Nellie Melba or a Brock and make a couple of comebacks, although we might twist his arm, but we thought we'd grab him for a chat on the podcast. I've known you for 20-something years, and I've not known you as not a motor racing photographer. First question, Dirk, welcome to the pod, but what on earth are you going to do now?
I'm going to enjoy my life.
What, you haven't enjoyed the last 30 years?
No, I have. It's been fabulous. No, it's I've got some plans for at home. And,
well, don't you mean that your family's got some plans and some work that's required to
that
be done?
As well, okay, right. No, it's been a great ride, and I had to think long and hard about finally ending it. And you're quite right, 24 odd years, I think, we've known each other, and most times it took you a long time to recognise me without a camera.
You don't have your camera here. In fact, we got one of the boys here to take a photo of us doing the podcast. So you being in a photo is a bit different.
Makes a big change. Yeah.
For those who don't know, I reckon a lot of people will know your credit, from Motorsport News for many years, where I met you back in the day. You've done stuff for Auto Action, more recently for Speed Cafe. You've done your own book, Through My Eyes, some years ago. Yep. You were the photographer for the Adelaide 500, which is obviously a bit topical given that the time that we're recording this, we would be in Adelaide.
In Adelaide, yeah.
And we're not. Yeah. Hopefully one day we may be able to be back. But we do have an Adelaide 500 book coming out later this year, featuring plenty of photographs from your good self that might look a little bit familiar along the way. But
look forward to it.
For those who might not follow, might not know, normally we talk to the drivers and those sorts of guys, but anyone who's been in the industry for a long time knows that it's not just the drivers. There's so many elements and people who make up this crazy little circus that we all sort of work in. Yeah. What attracted you to be, A, in motor racing, and B, a photographer, and C, to put the two together?
Well, I've always, right from school, I was into photography. I ran the camera club, and I wanted to be a photographer. I applied for the army. They accepted, so I went off and learned how to kill people.
Good for getting good photo positions at racetracks.
But I did a course while I was in the army, which just basically was everything I knew anyway. And I became the unit photographer.
So whereabouts is this? Were you deployed anywhere?
Townsville. I went to Malaysia for 3 months, but it was more of a swan song than a fighting thing. There was a risk, but not really. I was working for my father doing air conditioning in Adelaide, and a bloke that was one of our suppliers raced supercars. And he asked me out. He knew I had an interest in motorsport. And he said, "Do you want to come out and watch?" And I said, "Yeah, okay." And I took my camera and a couple of lenses and took some photos. Some people saw me taking photos. And the very first race meeting I ever attended with a camera, I sold pictures.
Wheeling and dealing from the start.
And it just took off from there. And a bloke called Peter Woodgate, who raced supercars, was I think he was a European champion, and he worked for Zipcarts. He rang up one day. He used to come over to Malala all the time, and he rang up and said, "I've got a mate who's starting a magazine. Would you be interested?" And I said, "Well, yeah," without really thinking about the consequences. And next thing you know, Chris Lambden rings me up and said, "There's a round of the Australian Touring Car Championship this weekend."
And this is 1993.
93.
Motorsport News.
Yes. Yeah. This is on the Tuesday he rang me.
Oh, they've left it. They've left it a long time to get you, yeah.
My accreditation was approved on Thursday, and the very first or second issue of Motorsport News, I had the cover.
I remember this pic. Can you remember what it was?
Yeah, it's Mark Scaife licking his lips after the champagne because he won at Malala. Yeah,
and I remember there's a brilliant Brock Mobile VP Commodore with the flame licking out the side that made the cover soon after around that time when he was driving for Advantage before he went to HRT.
Correct. So. And that was coming around Clubhouse.
Yeah.
I remembered that. Good Lord.
So there's no grand plan here. There was, I like photography. No. Oh, I'll go and look at some carts. This seems fun.
Yeah.
When I've seen a lot of people come into the media center and into, I guess, our media world.
Yeah.
And they pop in and they pop out. I want to be a photographer. It sounds really great. It's great compared to some other jobs that you could have, but there are plenty of sacrifices and plenty of elements, and we can go through some of those. But not many people stay. Not many people get an in, and not many people do a good enough job to stay in the game.
To stay in the game.
It's guys like – and people who follow our podcast will know the bylines on all the magazines, but it's guys like yourself, Mark Horsburgh, Scotty Wensley, you know, part of the furniture of media centres and our championship of supercars and all the racing around. So when did you click from it's a bit of fun and this is good to – I could actually make this my thing and full time it.
Yeah, it was weird because the acceleration was quite quick. Pardon the pun. it wasn't intended. Trust me. Very initially it was a bit of tits and giggles. You know, let's have a bit of fun. But because it progressed so quickly, I suddenly realised that I could make something of this and. I then developed I didn't write a plan down, but I had ideas in my head. And Ray Berghaus was running the accreditation for photographers at the time.
Through CAMS. Yep, now Motorsport Australia.
And hopefully he will back me up on this.
We'll find out.
Don't ask him. And I put in a plan to get my CAMS accreditation, and he told me afterwards that he'd never seen a photographer or a person come to get the CAMS accreditation with a proper plan for motorsport, not, oh, if you let me go here, I can do this. I went there and I said, look, this is what I want to do. I want to start doing more and more. I want to promote the sport. I want to sell pictures to magazines internationally, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And so unlike most other people, I got CAMS accreditation first time out.
Mm.
And so a lot of people arced up about that, I might say.
Very unlike you to have people arcing up with you. A bit of a theme that we'll explore during the pod.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, yes. No, I don't ask for it. I suppose I am maybe a little bit belligerent.
Is that from your heritage, perhaps, or your upbringing, or where does that come from?
I was born in Africa, so maybe that had a bit to do with it. I was born in Uganda, so, you know, the downtrodden and all that sort of thing.
Well, how long were you there? Did you come to Australia as a kid? Or?
Yeah. We were six when we came to Australia. So we lived in WA first,
mm-hmm.
and then came over to Victoria, and then I went
got
to
too cold. And
it got way too cold. Lived in a place called Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. No way. Well.
And the kicker here is that when I applied for the army, the local paper, the Hamilton Spectator, ran a whole page of my pictures of the. Remember, you know, the schools have their plays and speech nights, that sort of thing. So I'd taken all these photographs, and they developed them for me. And they said, "Can we use them?" And I said, "Well, absolutely."
Hmm.
And next thing you know, I get a phone call from the paper saying, "Do you want a job?" And I've just gone, "Well, I've just applied for the army. Will you wait?" And they said, "Absolutely." And I should have cottoned on then, you know, with how keen that they were to have me, that maybe that should have been the direction I went.
Mm.
But I went off and did the army for a bit, and 20 years later, there I was doing it as a full-time job.
Mm. It's changed so much because back in the day, it's not that long ago. So early 90s, we're sort of talking here. It's about negatives. It's about film. It's about you can't just go willy-nilly. You've got to nail the photo because it's going to cost you more money to get more film and the like. Whereas now digital, you can just bang, bang, bang until you find the one good frame among 42.
100%.
So you reckon that the guys who were around then who've stayed around now have got that honed art because they had to get it right then, because there wasn't 60,000 rolls of film. You'd only had X amount and you had to nail it, and therefore put you in good stead for the technology that we've got now.
Oh, yeah, totally. It was expensive, all right? So you couldn't go and shoot 40 rolls of film just because you could, because it was like $10 a roll.
And you couldn't waste it.
So you had to count your frames. So you would really look hard at where you wanted to shoot the shot that you wanted. You really had to think it all the way through.
And that's not just the location, but then the angles of the car.
And where the sun is and so on and so forth, you know, and whether you were going to do art, you know. So
you love art.
You love
a blur shot.
I love a blur shot.
When I was at Motorsport News, we'd be going, really nice, really nice. No. More blur. Bloody hell, Dirk. Where's one that's not a blur?
You did use some.
We used some. Usually the end of year shots of the year was always the place where those ones
go. There's a guy called Rainer Schlegelmich, German, who shot Formula One. He did hundreds and hundreds of races. And he fundamentally created the slow shutter speed, the photograph. He pioneered it in the 60s when I was still in nappies. And I sort of learned off that. You know, you look at his shots, and I'd like to think that some of it I've developed my own style, although I never thought I had a style. I just did it.
Yeah, and that became the style.
And then it became a style. And I only knew that because people go, "Love your style." And I go, "Really?" It's just like, "What style is that?" Modest to a T, I am.
In those days too, tell us about the process, because the process back then to get a photo into a magazine is complete. I mean, now you could walk around with your phone. I know that's a swear word to a professional photographer, but the point of that, you could take a photo, upload it to a server somewhere or to a news desk somewhere or to a editor somewhere, email it, send it via Facebook, wherever. It can go so far so fast now. Yeah. Whereas in the day, it was a huge, like, you'd have to sit up late at night, you'd have to develop photos, you'd have to get it, like, how did you do it back in the day compared to now?
Yeah, well, when we first started, nothing was delivered at the track, nothing at all. So Sunday night, if you weren't flying home, you could go and have a party and, you know, get on the juice, right? You could do whatever you liked. I'd fly home, or I'd leave the film.
To Adelaide?
Adelaide.
At the time,
At the time. I would leave my film in a Dropbox, a Nightbox.
That's not a Dropbox. Not on your computer. That's an actual physical pickup box.
You can't feed a roll of film through the modern Dropbox.
No. Did you try?
Probably. So you'd leave it, and they would, when the lab opened up first thing in the morning, the film would be there. They'd process it. You'd go and pick it up whenever you could. In those days, I used to have to, with the transparency film, what else do they call it? I don't know what the current generation call it.
I'm not in the current generation.
Transparency, positive film. Mm. I would have to get that done first, because I used to have to package it up and put it into a bag, international courier, and send it to England so that they would have it by Wednesday.
Mm.
The motorsport news stuff, I would go through my negs, or first doing it, we would do just prints straight up, and then I'd go through all the prints and pick out the ones that I wanted to send to Motorsport News, write a caption on the back and stick it in the express post bag. And again, you guys would, or the magazine would normally get that Wednesday.
Mm.
And then deadline was, 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon or something like that.
In that earlier motorsport news period, it was fortnightly. Out on a Thursday. I think it needed to go to press Tuesday night normally.
Yeah,
maybe
like
a bit
that.
Later. But
initially it was later.
Yeah.
And then they brought the deadline forward.
Which makes it harder.
But by then we had film scanners.
Mm.
So then it was a case of just developing the film. We didn't do prints.
Mm.
And then we would have a light box there, and we would just go through all the pictures and put a square around the one that we wanted to scan. And then we would spend endless hours scanning. And in those days, it was no such thing as email.
Yeah.
And
now
it's like
your client's got the phone, whether it's a team or a sponsor or a magazine or a website, bang.
Will rings me up and says, have you got a picture of Jamie before he crashed? Because I never get a crash, but
we'll talk about that.
And I can go, I'll press a button on the camera, get my phone out, transfer from the camera to the phone.
Bang.
Bang. Mm. Done. Mm. And I can have to my clients at Speedsport, I can have Speed Cafe.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Sorry, Speedsport doesn't exist anymore.
No, we used to in New Zealand. Yeah, old magazine.
They want a picture at the end of the session, and they'll have it before the next session started.
Mm.
So, 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's ridiculous. And it makes it difficult because it limits how much creativity you can put, because instead of moving to another spot, you're sending pictures.
Mm.
All right?
Mm.
And so...
And having someone to help you, that's another cost. That's another, what you're earning to be there. Sure. You're spending on someone to help you, and you go, what's the point? So
So, look, I miss the film days. I quite enjoyed shooting.
Is the challenge
film.
Of it?
Yeah, the challenge of it. And you don't know if the arty photograph that you've just taken has worked or not.
You got to wait.
Right. They call it chimping these days. When you look at the back of your camera to check the photo that you took. All right. So you know instantly whether the photograph worked or not.
Mm.
And so you see a lot of people, and I've fallen into the trap as well, and I try not to do it quite as much as I have. It's a bad habit, I think.
Habits in life.
But in the old days, you would walk from there to there. You would only stop in between if there was cars on the track and something was happening, and you would take the picture.
Mm.
But you would go, I'm going to have the photograph at Griffith's Bend, and then I'm going to walk to the cutting, and I'm going to do it at the cutting and not in between. But now with digital, as you're walking, because it doesn't cost you anything and you can just delete it, you just keep firing off pictures because it might be good. Not because it will be good,
yeah.
Because it might be good.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Who's your favorite person to photograph as a person in motorsport? Is there someone who's got unique characteristics or features? Because when you're a familiar face like yourself or some of the photographers who've been around a long time, the drivers, the team managers, you build a rapport with people in the pit lane who you might not know them mega well deep personally, but you know them professionally.
Yeah,
they know what you're doing. You know what they're doing. Is there anyone that you like taking photos of because they give you something every time or you get something you didn't expect?
I like shooting Shane Van Gisbergen.
Why so?
Well, he's
the beard.
He's quite expression. He has expressions in his face, right?
And he doesn't give too many though.
No,
too often.
He doesn't. And other photographers complain that he turns around and he'll face away and won't do stuff for them. But I've never had that problem. Who else? There's some older ones. John Bauer's usually pretty good.
Can we line up all your photos of John Bauer from all over the years from our archive at work and just see if anything's actually changed?
Probably not.
Not really.
I think he looks the same as he did when he was Well, he won't tell anyone his real age.
We'll get his birth certificate. Yeah, don't worry. We'll get the real number.
I like Jamie, but it's hard getting a decent picture of Jamie. David Reynolds is easy. you're almost guaranteed something with David. I've never really thought about it. That's a good question.
It's the point of this podcast, asking questions that no one's thought to tell us.
It's a good question.
What about corners? What are the, Bathurst is an obvious one, but what's your favourite corner to shoot on where you get the best shot that you – what's the first place that you're looking forward to going there when you turn up at Bathurst?
Oh, the Dipper.
Yeah. On the inside there.
Yeah. On the inside at the Dipper. They've put a fence there now that we're not allowed to go close to the – to the wall, and they've ruined it.
And there's photos from back in the day where it feels like you're about to get in the passenger side, really.
I have been leaning over the...
many moons ago when you were allowed to.
When we were allowed to.
Yeah.
My knee would be up against the concrete wall, safe as houses. It really was. But it's such a great shot. And there's so many things you can do at the Dipper, different shots, different angles, fast shutter speed, slow. But way back in the early days, when there was no concrete walls, especially at the Dipper, the earth bank used to tip down to the road. And this is when the cars used to really get on two wheels.
Lift that inside
wheel. You see the classic shots of the cars, coming down and the wheel lifting right up. And back in the day when Mr. Schenken was more amenable to allowing photographers to do certain things, I actually got a little tripod and I put it it was still on the grass. It wasn't on the road, but we positioned it so that when the cars actually did lift their wheels, cutting the corner, went over the top of the camera. And it was a great shot. Yeah.
Speaking of great shots, tell me about how I vividly remember you put one of your cameras, I'm not sure if it was the camera and the only one you had at the time or a separate one, on the roll hoop of Scott Dixon's Formula Holden out at Mallard back in the day. Before he was multiple IndyCar Series champion and Indy 500 winner and all that stuff, he was the chubby redhead kid from New Zealand in Formula Holden. I think he was about 17 or 18 at the time.
No, he was 15.
When he first turned up, he was. So he won the championship in 98 in the Simon Hartwich car.
Correct.
And you shot with that out at Malalas. So how did you do that? I think the shots ran in Motorsport News.
You did.
The car was on the track at race speed. It wasn't like it was sitting on the track and made to look fast. How did you?
Don't worry,
do that?
I was standing in the braking zones waiting to catch it. So I had a clamp. And
this is long before GoPros and all that type of
GoPros
stuff.
Were not even thought of. So I had a clamp and I clamped it on, cable tied it on so it wouldn't come off, and tight so that it wouldn't shake everywhere. And then I ran a cable from the camera on the opposite side so that you couldn't see it with the once you had the photo. And then we brought it into the driver's cockpit. And we taped the button to the steering wheel.
So Scott took those photos,
Scott took the
photos. So if we use any of those in future, because we're lucky enough that we have your archive.
Yeah, Concept Dirks.
Concept Declines with Pick by S. Dixon.
Yeah. So
I hope he doesn't come looking for a royalty.
And he was looking at me when I said, look, this is what we're going to do. And he's just going, yeah, no, I'm not sure. a 2 kilogram camera certainly weighs a lot more when it comes off when you're traveling at speed and braking.
And it didn't.
But it didn't come off, no. But we did I had that camera on the back of Simon Wills's rear wing on his Konica winning car.
Mm-hmm.
And we did shots there. I've had it on various things over the time, yeah. So.
And come home unscathed with the camera every time.
Pretty much. Yeah.
What do you mean pretty much? It's no, a yes or no question, Dirk.
No, it always came back still on the car. Yeah, we never lost it, so it was good.
Now, famous name association, S. Dixon, is one.
Mm, yep.
Commonly talked about story in the media centre with everyone over the years. You're the only person I know in the media centre who has been in an Adelaide Grand Prix celebrity challenge race.
Yeah.
It was, 1991?
91,
in BMWs, in a field featuring Elle Macpherson.
Correct. So
how did this happen? You won a comp, didn't you?
Yeah, I bought a ticket into one of the grandstands because in those
this is pre-photography.
This is pre-photography. I was just starting doing it, and but in those days, I bought a seat in one of the grandstands at the Centre Chicane, and so one day I was sitting there working away, and the phone rang, and this person goes, "Oh, Dirk, you got second prize." And I went, what?
In what?
And they said, oh, you've won a
So you didn't even know about the competition?
No, I just bought the ticket because I wanted to go to the Grand Prix.
Fair enough.
And I wouldn't believe her. And she goes, no, you've got to drive in the Celebrity Challenge. And I'm going, you're right, eh?
And that second prize?
Yeah.
What was
that
first?
Was second. What was the first prize was a car, BMW, and a trip to the BMW factory in Germany. And the woman who won that actually rang me and tried to swap. And I'm going, no. And a lot of people have gone, well, why didn't you take the car? And I said, I can buy a car.
Mm, can't buy that.
Couldn't buy it. And we went to Norwell. We did driver training at Norwell. We stayed at Sanctuary Cove. They fed us. It was magnificent. And Elle was amazing.
And that's when she was huge. She's world famous now, but at the time, early 90s,
she was in front of every camera that was running around doing modelling. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And who else was in that race?
I'd say Eddie McGuire was in the race.
Was he a celeb then?
Yeah.
I'm looking over at Will Daly, our audio chief here, and he's giving the thumbs up. He's the expert of celebrity challenge stuff at VH Sleuth.
Okay. Robert DiMedico was in
there. Dipper?
Yeah, Dipper
was in there. The big Dip. Yeah, for our more modern listeners, he's the guy off I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yeah.
You might not know that he played for
a Hawthorn superstar.
By the way. Yeah. You are a Hawthorn supporter too, aren't you?
I am.
Good. Yeah. Good. We can carry on here with this.
And James Morrison, the musician.
Yeah. He's a
and there was racer. Yeah, there was a host. Yeah. So it was Trevor Hendy.
Iron Man. Yep.
So he won the race in the end.
And where did you finish?
I finished 10th.
Out of how many?
22.
That's pretty good. That's in the first half of the field. Yeah.
So I qualified 5th.
Oh.
I spun in the third corner. Turning into East Terrace because it was.
Hang on, I'm hearing a racing driver excuse coming on.
It was
here.
More like swimming, ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you. The rain was horrendous.
That was the year that the Grand Prix itself was cut after, 12 laps or 11 laps or something.
And we were on, I upset the technicians because we were on Bob Jane all rounders and they ain't race tyres, I can tell you. But, yeah, so I spun. I went back to second last. Anyone who didn't get past me was L. And I fought my way back to 10th.
Nice recovery drive.
In five laps.
Not bad.
And Channel 9 cheated, right, because
here we go. All right.
They had Tony Gregg mic'd up.
Oh, Tony Gregg.
Yeah, Tony Gregg.
Was he going hard and fast?
Yeah, he's going very hard and fast. And I had fastest lap. And then on the last lap, AJ and
be Darryl Eastlake, wouldn't
Darryl Eastlake.
It?
Darryl Eastlake. Yeah. They were talking him through the lap and they were egging him on, and he stole my fastest lap on the last lap.
Yeah. You're not bitter about it much,
no,
are you?
Not at all.
30 years on and he's not got over
but
it.
But I made friends with his brother. Was it Keith? Oh.
No, Keith Gregg played for North Melbourne.
No.
His brother, Tony Gregg's brother, was involved for a time with Team Dynamic in
the
V8 Supercar team in Adelaide.
His name's gone out the door.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's because I'm 60 now. I've got an excuse.
Oh, that's fair enough. I don't. I'm nearly 40. I don't have an excuse yet, but I'm building up to it. But anyway, awesome.
Oh,
not many people could say they've done
such a mega, mega weekend. We went out to a restaurant. They booked out the whole restaurant, and Trevor Hendy and Elle and Morrison and a couple of others got up and basically took all the instruments off the band that were playing and just jammed. It was amazing. It was so good. Yeah. But something we won't forget. I've still got the helmet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I've got all the drivers signed it.
That's
cool. And L McPherson did a little love heart on the visor bit at the front all by herself with a little L. And, it was good. And, trying to think, newsreader from Channel 7, Jane Doyle, who's still a newsreader in Channel 7.
Yeah, in Adelaide.
She was in the race.
Is that your most cherished bit of motor racing memorabilia that you've got, you reckon?
Oh, it's the only bit of memorabilia
really?
I've got.
Really? You don't have anything else? You haven't collected anything along the way?
The only thing I've got is books.
Some good books with some good
some
photos.
Some great
in
books.
Them.
Mm. Some awesome V8 Sleuth AN1 Media.
Stop it. Just because they've got your photos in them. That's the only way that has made them awesome. For those who might not know, a couple of years ago we did a deal to buy your archive and make sure that it lives on. This is before you decided to stop shooting, which you decided last year. We did this deal about 3 years ago.
It'd be three or 4 years ago.
So we're really honoured to have your archive, which goes right back to the Adelaide Grand Prix stuff in those early 90s.
Absolutely.
And I haven't found an in-car shot from the BMW Celebrity Race yet. You failed miserably to record that one accurately. Yeah, you must have been busy at the time.
Oh, just a tad.
Recovering from your spin down it. To chase your way back through the field.
And can I say that without sounding the word's gone, overly thing, that I am mega proud that you guys have got my archive.
No, thanks, man. And we're proud that you let us have it.
And how you're using it. It's stunning.
Oh, we haven't even really touched the surface yet. We keep finding negatives at work going, didn't know we had that one.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to have to pay Scott Dixon for that. But anyway. The eras of kind of negatives and slides is what the photos are on from the early 90s through to pretty much the early 2000s when the photographers all moved across to digital cameras. And the early digital cameras compared to now on the size of the image and the megapixels and the – I mean, you think about how mobile phones have improved with camera technology and that, let alone, you know, an actual camera. Between 2001, I think you went digital. So it's 20 years ago.
Yeah.
How does it compare from then to now?
Oh, it's insane. The file sizes doubled every year and the camera prices halved every year.
Yeah.
It was my very first digital camera without a lens, no battery, and no card cost me $19,000.
In like 2001 or something.
2001.
Like that. 2000, yeah.
19 grand.
And then by the time you bought all the other bits, that's...
It came close to, I think, 20 and a half, something like that. And the file size was 5.7 meg.
Tapped out. And now a photo is, what, 30 meg without trying? 45 meg without even trying. So the detail in the images and the size. And
my mate in who had the magazine in Speed Sport, New Zealand, I kept sending him the digital files and he goes, can you shoot film?
fingers here. My ears swelling up.
We want to use them bigger.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years, from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.
Along the way, there's plenty of funny stories, and one of the – you referenced it before, so you started this and I'll finish it.
All right.
There's a joke around the media center that you don't get crashes. You have got some crashes in your time, but you tended to always not be in the right corner at the right time when someone had a major shunt.
Never in the right corner at the right time.
Why? Are you the unlucky guy that never wins the meat raffle, and that, or do you just not have luck at the racetrack shooting?
Yeah, there's an element of that, of not being lucky. But then I don't stay in the one place. Because I want to cover the event.
Mm.
I don't want to get crashes. Right? I've never been someone.
And we're not saying we want them to happen, but they do.
But I never based my income on getting a crash.
Mm.
All right. And I got, people spinning into the gravel. I mean, that's Rodney Forbes, for instance.
Did that a couple of times, Rodney.
He gave you plenty of opportunity, that's for sure. But the big crashes.
What's the biggest crash you ever got?
Schumacher's crash at the Grand Prix.
In?
Ralph Schumacher, when he got airborne at the first corner,
2002.
Two.
That's the year that opened up the door for Webber.
And Webber finished.
So you've got the full sequence, don't you? Of him launching off the back of Barrichello, I think it was.
You actually now have the full sequence.
Oh, yeah, I do have that now. Yeah, that's right.
My favourite picture of that is Ralph's car's pointing vertically upright because he'd just run into the back of...
I think it was Rubens. The Ferrari. Yeah.
And that car's spinning and Michael is off to the left-hand side of the corner and he's turning in and he's looking up at his brother in the
flying
air.
Flying past him.
Probably thinking,
whoa,
get down from there, Ralph. They're like... so that was an amazing seat. So that was one of the biggest ones. Another one I did get was the Lansvale car rolling, Cameron McConville rolling at Sandown.
First corner.
Yep. Got that one.
Yep.
But when I did my Through My Eyes book, which was 10 years of my motorsport, there's 5 crashes.
In the whole thing?
In the whole thing.
I think my personal favourite... I think it was John Morris, longtime photographer who shot for Motorsport News back in the day. Not only did he get the crash of a Formula Holden one day, but he also got the photo of you looking over at the wall of where the crash had occurred, just to really rub it in.
All my friends in inverted commas.
I was going to say, for those who can't see, he has put the inverted comma mark up around his head. Yeah.
Actually started a thread on Facebook, and it was pictures of me looking the wrong way.
I love how we think that this community is so giving and warm and loving, and we just rip the piss out of one
Ray Berghaus at Skyline taking a picture of me trying to change lenses while a kangaroo's hopping across the road.
I've got a feeling what our next book's going to be made up of.
Look, I used to get really frustrated and angry about it. And the other running joke is that when you get to a racetrack, you get the map of the track and get a piece of string and measure the 2 furthest points. So whenever there's a crash, put the string on the crash and then find where I was.
Speaking about arriving at a track, you've been known to arrive a little early.
Yeah, just a tad early, yeah.
What was the story in Darwin one year? Was it Darwin?
For the sunrise shots?
No, I think you arrived a week early.
Oh, that early. Yeah, thanks for that. I'd forgotten about that one. Yeah, no, we booked the flights because we found out that sometimes booking flights to Darwin, you didn't save any money and you could actually get...
By booking them earlier, you mean?
By booking them earlier. Yeah. And I could get flights cheaper or as cheap waiting until the week of the race even. And anyway, I got my wife to to book the flights. And I think trying to work out exactly what happened, there was a reason. I think there was a change.
Mm.
And then when he goes, oh, no, this flight here is really cheap. And I said, oh, book it. You know, like, it was stupid cheap. It was ridiculous.
There's a reason.
And there was a reason because it wasn't in the same week as the race meeting. So I was actually going to fly home on the Monday before the race meeting.
And then go back.
Yeah. But it was cheaper for me to stay there for the week. The flight home, to catch the flight home, was $1,000.
Stay.
So I just
enjoy the day and sign a few beers.
So I had a holiday for a week. Yeah, it was great. And I've not been allowed to forget that one.
No. When calendars have come out for race events and dates, everyone does give you the – make sure you read the dates, too.
Yeah. Rhys van der Side was I rang him up to say, oh, mate, because he was supposed to pick me up at the airport, right? That was what was arranged.
He's another photographer.
So I rang him up and said, I'm here, mate. Well, I'd sent him a message saying, I'm here, mate. And he goes, where? And I said, I can't say what I'd said, but yeah, I said, funny.
At the you-know-what airport.
Yeah, funny. And he goes, no, seriously, where? And I said, I'm in Darwin. And at that point, he realised what had happened. And he rang me and he goes, why are you in Darwin? We're all at Winton.
For some other race meeting.
And then, of course, in between, he's managed to
tell everyone.
Tell a whole bunch of people, and it went around like wildfire.
As much as we're ripping the mickey over, I think it's got to come the other way because you and I have a story. When I was a young journalist, I hadn't even started full-time at Motorsport News. I was still at school.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I came up and did the – remember in 1999, there was a two-litre Bathurst race of the Bathurst Tourers. Yep. It was – The Channel 7 Bathurst, and it rained all weekend. It was miserable. It was
shocking.
No crowd. Mm. It was kind of at the time when there'd been the split. Channel 7 had lost interest in motor racing, and nice to see them back now, obviously. Yep. But the management at the time were out. They were just putting this event on, rolling the arm over. I think Octagon got involved, and it was they wouldn't let 2 litres and Bathurst Tourers run together because Bathurst Tourers were being sanctioned by Oscar, by Bob Jaynes.
It was so political.
It was all political. Yeah. But anyway, long and short of it was, I'm in my final year of school and Motorsport News having had me come the year before to cover the New Zealand touring car class in the 2 litre Bathurst had got me to come up and work with Phil up because Phil Browning was in the television team that weekend.
Ah, that's right. Yes.
So they needed another reporter and I was young and cheap. So why not?
Yeah.
And we stayed at the college down the road from the track.
The university, yeah.
And I had a little problem and you solved it. Basically, that's the basic way to put it.
That's how I roll, really. But, we went out and had
We went out for dinner or lunch or I don't know what
dinner,
we're
I think it was, and we maybe had one or two drinks.
I don't think I even did. That makes it even worse.
Yeah, well, quite possibly. Anyway, the said gentleman opposite me here left his keys in the room.
Mm.
And closed
the door.
It was on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going, what am I going to do? And I said, that's easy.
I didn't know your army background at this stage, but I soon found out about it as you climbed through the window and leapt up the wall.
Yeah, I scaled up the outside of the building and over the balcony and in. So it was all good. Yeah.
Never done it again.
No, I haven't needed to.
I've always made sure that I know where the keys are and I can't lose out on them. So there we go. We're one all for swapping all stories sweet. And for stopping stories.
Yeah.
Last year was a weird year for the world. It was weird for motor racing.
Yeah, it was awful.
We did Adelaide. I mean, it was – Holden was gone. Holy hell.
Yeah.
Then later on in the year, we find Adelaide's gone.
Yeah.
The world stops. Yeah. No car racing. You managed to get back to the track. For the first couple of rounds back, other photographers weren't permitted.
Correct.
Mark Horsburgh, the series photographer of supercars, was the only one at the first Eastern Creek and the second, I think, maybe,
too. Yeah, so Eastern Creek was – no, there was photographers at the second Eastern
Creek. At the second one there were others, but you weren't there.
No, I didn't go to that one.
But
first event was the Darwin event, June. And irony of ironies, I was a week early. not my fault this time.
Hang on, okay. So whose fault was this one?
So this one was COVID because there was we were all booked on our flights to go to Darwin, and all the teams were in quarantine on the Gold Coast in various places, and they were catching a bus to Brisbane Airport to fly to Darwin, and the bus actually got turned around three times, and their flight kept getting. And so I was flying out on a certain, I can't remember what day it was, but and it was a 2-week stay because it was a double header, and I'm ringing Supercars and I'm going, I need to know whether to cancel my flight or not. You know, I don't want to get there and have to turn around and come home. You know, it's going to cost a bomb. Anyway, no one could tell me. I was ringing Mark Horsburgh and I was ringing Paul Glover and I was ringing everyone, and I'm just going, what's going to happen? And they go, we seriously don't know. And they didn't. They had no idea whether they were going to fly or not, and if they did fly, whether they were going to be allowed off the plane. Anyway, so I got on the plane and I landed at Darwin Airport.
Did you text Reese this time?
No, I didn't text Reese this time, but I turned on my phone and it went off and text messages everywhere, and the first round was postponed.
Another week holiday in Darwin.
So I had another week holiday in Darwin. I played golf and did some bird watching. It was great. But what they did was they actually moved that event to after the second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, people did comment to me about how I was there early again.
Just, this time, the irony, not my fault.
Both times, Darwin. Yeah. You know, like, go figure. Yeah.
It all clicks into place.
Absolutely.
When did you decide that I'm going to stop?
Oh, look, I think I'd really decided at Christmas time before
2019.
The end of 2019.
Yeah.
I pretty much decided that, you know, traveling was enough.
Mm. Doing every round, being away for 4 or 5 days at a time.
And then there was ARG ramping up and, you know, all that. So I said to...
Well, IE for more events that you would have to go and
do.
Yeah.
And so I said to Wendy, I said, look, I'll make this my
life. By the way, Wendy's your wife, we should point out. We should mention that.
One of them. No. So just wife in every port, you know. No.
Really?
Just kidding.
What?
No, just kidding.
Oh, I thought we had an exclusive.
Yeah. it's just, you know, 30 years of getting up at 4:30 in the morning to catch a 6 o'clock flight and flying to wherever and then flying back. It's that part of it's just got to me, and I just...
It wears down.
I love the patch of paradise that we've bought in Queensland. It's up in the hinterland, and it's just beautiful. And I just want to stay there. And so that was I was going to have a really good year.
Was it going to be the farewell tour?
Yeah,
and
I had good contracts. I increased contracts. I won new ones. So it was going to be a good year, and it turned into the worst. So. I had no work at all from the Friday of the Grand Prix until Darwin.
No car racing. At this stage, it's not like, we should explain that you're not a sport photographer. You're not employed by an agency to then go,
I work for myself.
I'll go and shoot football, or I'll go and shoot some soccer, or I'll go and shoot whatever. You work for yourself. You run your own race. You run your own business.
Yeah.
And you've got your own clientele. So if all those clients are in the one sport that's not tipping.
That's it.
The cars are not going around.
No work.
Dirk doesn't take any photos. So was there a chance to do some other photography at least, things? Or?
I did two small jobs, you know, that were not involved with motor racing.
Hmm.
One was photographing a baby. Yeah.
I'm sure you did a nice blur shot of the baby as well.
Yeah, I did do some arty stuff.
It wasn't slow
shutter speed stuff, but it was, you know, just the little fingers holding the mother's finger.
That's nice.
Just the feel good stuff.
You love your nature photography too.
Oh, I love
it. You can't retire from that. You got to keep doing
that. I'll keep doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to, as soon as I've got myself sorted, I'm going to do lessons. So
Dirk is going to take instruction from someone.
No, I'm going to give
instruction. Oh, you're going to give instruction. I was going to say, because that sounds really weird.
No, I'm going to teach people how to do motorsport photography.
Like a course that people can sign up for?
So I'll take, I don't want a big group of people, so I'll limit to maybe 6, maybe 10.
Yep.
And we'll go out to Queensland Raceway, or we'll go out to Lakeside, or we'll, and I've spoken to Paul Morris, and he is quite keen for me to do it there.
At Norwell.
Yeah, at Norwell, when they have their drive days and various things. The Norwell option is a good option because we'll have a little bit more freedom and we can go a few more places.
Yeah.
The Queensland Raceway one is a good option, obviously. It makes it harder for spectators because of the fences and what have you that they've got there. But and I will do some nature. I'll take people out in the rainforest and we'll not just photograph birds, but I love doing stuff that's in sunlight with shadows behind. So you just get a highlight on the subject, be it a bit of fungi or a bit of vine hanging down or a leaf or, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, when people go to the rainforest, a lot of people, they just make it a mission to walk from that point to that point as quickly as they can. They talk as loud as they like, which is quite loud often, and they just don't see anything. So I just want to... I hopefully would be able to teach them how to see things,
which sounds simple, but it's actually
a
skill.
It's not easy. Yeah, you know, it's you have to train yourself to look for it. You know, the insects or the shadows and what might be in the shadows and that sort of thing. You know, and a lot of photography, whether it's motorsport or nature or photographing you sitting there looking at me or whatever, it's realizing it's a photograph as well, not just, and I've done it, I've looked at something and I thought, oh, that's good, and then when I've walked away I've gone, idiot, you should have taken a picture, right, and then it's too late. So a lot of photography is realizing to take the picture and then creating it, not just. And part of digital, we get back to this, is it's now too easy. People just rip off a picture without thinking about whether they should be kneeling down, standing up, moving further around that way or whatever, you know.
What do you think you can, is it, in terms of coaching and, you know, mentoring motorsport photographers, and if there's anybody listening to our podcast who is perhaps interested or is a budding photographer who's maybe shooting some state racing stuff or some club motorsport, motocarnas or autocrosses or things like that and has got an interest and is actually really keen, send us a note through the website and we can we can connect you to Dirk.
Absolutely.
You might end up with more than six. And you might not want. You are wanting quite a life and we've given you a deluge of people who are interested. But what would you be able to pass on, or what would you like to pass on to the budding photographer who wants to spend the next 20, 30 years photographing the sport?
Just to get the first thing is to get the car out of the middle of the picture.
Oh, there's some people who would go, what?
Yeah.
You've got to have it in the middle.
They've got a focusing point in the middle. And so whatever they're photographing, be it a race car, as well, especially a race car, that's where they put it. And there's so, and it's, I rarely do that.
I know. Yeah. I've seen thousands of photos to prove it.
So that would be one thing. Don't use too fast a shutter speed. And, you know, be creative. Don't stand with the other four photographers. You know, even if it's moving 10 meters further down, you know, you get a different angle, you get a different feel of photograph, and you don't have what they've got. Or they don't have what you've got, more relatively, I suppose. And, you know, all through my career, I've always generally, other than, say, Skyline, where everyone goes first thing in the morning because that's the best shot and that's the only time you can shoot Skyline, pretty much I'll be somewhere by myself.
And it's not because you smell or just deliberately want to be somewhere different.
I refuse to use eau de cologne. No, it's because I choose to be by myself. You know, occasionally I'll go out with someone and I don't mind. You know, a bit of company. It can get lonely. You know, you're out there sitting waiting for sessions and, you know, I can leave the media centre at 6 o'clock in the morning and not come back until 5:30 in the afternoon. You know, so it's a hard graft, that's for sure.
What's the most extreme lengths you've gone to get a shot?
Extreme lengths to get a shot. The bridge at Sandown.
The bridge at Sandown?
Yeah, when I got kicked out of the racetrack.
Hang on a minute. I don't remember this one.
Don't you remember?
Yeah, we're getting onto all of the drama.
I organised with Supercars to mount my camera on the bridge.
At the end of the pit straight
at
into
the
turn
end of
one.
The main straight at Sandown.
And how long ago was this?
It's technically not a bridge. It's just a gantry.
Technically, it's not a bridge. It was a gantry, Your Honour. How long ago was this?
This would have been 2011.
Okay, yeah.
So I went to Supercars and I said, can I put the camera there? And they said, if Sandown are happy with you to put it there, we're happy. They knew the clamps that I use. So I went to Sandown and they said, sure, you can put it up there if you like. Supercars are happy. And I said, Supercars are happy. So I waited till the circuit was green on the Saturday, and there was – so all the practice sessions had finished and there was going to be the supercar race. Climbed up the gantry a la the university, scurried across, clamped it all down, checked it, made sure it was all good, climbed down, and I'm standing there waiting. And next thing you know, someone from Sandown turns up with his nice press white shirt and he's got a security guard behind him. And I'm thinking – and they kept looking – once they spoke to the marshals, they kept looking at me, you see. And I'm thinking, oh, this can't be good. Anyway, the race started and we did the race and they came up. Is that your camera up in the gantry? And I said, well, you know it is. And they went, yeah. How did you get it up there? And I said, well, I climbed up and went across. And did you have permission to put it up there? I said, yes, I did. Sandown and no. Did you have permission to climb up to put it up? And I went, well, no one asked me. No one said, how are you going to get up there?
They said, you can have a shot from there.
I forgot that I was in Victoria, which is the world capital of OH&S and everything.
Here would you like a fluoro vest with your coffee, sir?
And anyway, I was back in the hotel room working at 8:30 that night and Cole Hitchcock rang me.
Who was the media manager
for
a long time.
He was the media manager and he goes, oh, Dirk. And I just knew.
He saw his name and you went,
And I just knew. And I just gone, yeah, Cole. And he goes, this thing with this camera. And I went, yeah, what? And he says, you've upset a few people. I said, what do you mean? I said, I got permission. He said, but unfortunately you've been banned from the racetrack. And, mate, it was one of the busiest race meetings I've ever had. I had clients everywhere. And an instant headache, and I just gone, oh, my God, what am I going to do, you know? Like, this is terrible. Anyway, he goes, look, we've got to tell you that you've been banned. I said, well, how am I going to get my camera gear? All right. He says, oh, no, you're allowed at the track. You're just not allowed to work. And I'm going, yeah, well, how's that work? Anyway, he says, well, you just got to go and see Kurt in the morning.
Kurt Saskuski from Supercars.
Yeah, from Supercars. And he'll give you a briefing, a safety briefing, and we'll go on from there. And I went, okay. And I walked into the office and Kurt's sitting there and he's just folded his arms and he looked at me and smiled and he goes, Dirk, 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 Dirk.
Yeah, but did you get the photos?
I did.
Oh,
so they were okay. Yeah, they were good.
Not so bad.
Yeah. So that was one extreme. Yeah, so that would be one of the extreme ones.
I remember another extreme time when you weren't even taking a photo. So Adelaide Clipsal 500 as it was then.
Yeah.
I was in the on-track commentary box. I can't remember what year it was. Mid-2000s. Maybe it was 05, 06, 07. It was probably post. It's probably when I started doing the on-track commentary or something for the supercar stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Post-race, the crowd fills out onto the pit straight after the race. I'm just talking with the 500 FM TV team about the race and what a great result it was from whoever. I can't remember the year. You know, Jamie Wincup's probably a fair chance that he might have won.
Yeah.
But I was just looking down in the crowd, just randomly looking, and I spotted you. And 3 seconds later, a clearly pissed punter tried to pinch your camera off your shoulder and whacked you one.
Yeah,
he pushed right in front of me. I just happened to look in the right place, but wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
You weren't happy, were you?
Oh, I was very unhappy, yes. He pushed me off the wall and I broke.
You were trying to take a shot of the podium.
Yeah, I was doing the podium. And in those days, they didn't have a gantry for us to stand on. Mm. So we were standing on the wall and he pushed me off the wall. And there was no fencing along there in those days. And so I bounced over the wall to secure him. And I marched up and unbeknownst to me, he had a stubby in his hand. And he nailed me right on the side of the head. And so I had considerable blood and concussion. I actually had concussion for 2 weeks.
Mm.
Yeah, it was not
good. It's a high wall.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to have a tumble off.
Rob Cianfloni from Getty Images
for years.
He has actually taken a photo of me looking at – I was supposedly working on the laptop. I had it open. My hands were on the keys. I had absolutely zero idea what I was doing.
Or where you were or who you
were. I was just looking at the screen. I didn't know. I was looking at a picture and I didn't know what to do with it and what have you. But the police had come in.
It's an assault.
Yeah.
It's an assault.
So they were standing behind me and the guy's got a holstered gun. But he was standing behind me, right? And so I'm just doing this. The next thing because Rob is sitting opposite me and he's picked up the camera and he's taking this picture and I'm looking at him going, what? And he goes, I turned around and there's these police. And they said, oh, we need to talk to you. And, But they got the guy, but he gave a false name and that was that. So,
camera damaged?
A lens got broken. Flash got broken. My sunglasses got broken. And I was broken.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but the Adelaide people were fantastic. They got me to the first aid and... Oh, I was standing there shooting the podium. I did do that. I battled on and the doctor stood there and held on to my epaulets because I had a race suit on and he held on to my epaulets so that
which, for those who don't know, the straps at the top of your shoulders of a race suit, which can be used to pull a driver out of a burning car or, whatever it is.
Sorry, and so he held on to me so I wouldn't fall over. Yeah.
Held you up, snap. Right, so
I shot the podium. And the guys were great. A few people, did photos for me that had to go out.
Mm.
Is
that your worst injury at a racetrack? Well, have you ever had any incident with a punter?
I had an unfortunate incident in New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I forgot about that. Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that one up.
Where we got into a discussion. He worked for a mob called Silver Fern, which was a charity type set up for disadvantaged youth, i.e. bad youth that are trying to come good to a degree. But these guys were stopping me going from where I was allowed to go.
And this was at Pukekohe?
This is at Pukekohe. And so I had an argument with them.
And they're they're not officials.
They were spectator officials.
Right.
Right. But this guy was stopping me and I just gone, mate, I'm allowed here and just left. So after the podium, we were walking back and saw this guy. And I thought, well, I'm going to report you because what you did was wrong. Right. He called me, he was being abusive and called me names and all the rest of it. I don't care about the name calling, but the way his behavior was wrong. So I just wanted his name so I could report him. And it just went from, mate, what's your name, to the world's biggest escalation. It was like the skyrocket taking off. And these guys just surrounded me and started abusing me and pushing me. And the bloke who was running it, good Lord, I've forgotten his name. I'll think of it. Anyway, he started testing me and all the rest of it. And I just told him he was nice swear.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I just told him he was a dickhead.
Oh, that's not swearing. I thought it was going to get more fruity than that.
Oh, sorry.
We'll take that. We won't cash it in for the opposite.
Yeah, so I turned around to walk away and he kicked my foot. Now, it's I've got 20 kilos worth of camera gear around me.
One over each shoulder.
And I've got my big lens, which weighs 6 kilos, behind my head. So I started falling. Now, if I'd kept going and landed face first, that lens would have hit me in the back of the head. And quite
buried
frankly,
your face in the ground.
You and I would not be talking now, right? So I just, as you would, I got angry and I turned around. And I realized that, no, don't hit him in time. So I didn't. And I just shook my head at him and I said, oh, you're just a toss. And that's when he deliberately pushed me towards a small brick wall, put his foot on my foot and then pushed me so that I went backwards over this wall. And
Like a garden bed?
Yeah,
or
like a garden bed. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then my head hit the ground and, well, I hit the camera actually because the camera was still behind my head and it knocked me out. So Ross Gibb was the photographer. He watched it. Ben Orr, the photographer, he saw it as well. And then this bloke, brave as he was, I nearly had his name, ran and he left the circuit immediately so that he couldn't be caught. Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing was
some poor bloke, because the one thing that could identify him was he had these white shoes on, right? So I said, oh, this guy, he's wearing white shoes. So someone in the support paddock for the NZ Super Tourers is wearing white shoes. So the police go down there and bail him up. Poor bloke.
It's probably thousands of people wearing white
no,
shoes.
There wasn't too many. It had been raining anyway.
Oh, so, okay. So yeah, everyone's wore their black ones that day.
Yeah. So that was random. And that was... and
But that,
it was
that
very,
put you out for... That was out for the weekend.
Oh, yeah, that was on the Sunday afternoon. Right. But I flew home that night. The next morning. But I was incredibly humbled and surprised by the react. Mind you, it had a 500,000. Ben Orr put it on Facebook and he had something like 500,000 hits.
Video or the photo?
The video.
He
had a video of it, yeah. And it just went nuts. And I was getting messages from all over the place. It was astonishing. Mm. Yeah.
And one of those things where
very humbling.
In the whole scheme of things, it shouldn't have happened.
It should never have happened. Maybe I should have just let bygones be bygones, you know. But I wasn't to know that just by asking for this guy's name, that
you didn't take a swig at him to start it. It just was a simple
not at all
question. Anyway, I think the most common question that you, or a bit of abuse that any photographer would cop over the fence from punters at a racetrack.
Being in front of them.
Get out of the way. You heard that one a few times?
Just a few. and in the bad old days, around 2000, when it was quite unruly up here at Mount Panorama.
Which we're sitting here, by the way, recording this at Bathurst.
We're at Bathurst, yeah. That was particularly bad because they had no gumption at all about throwing full cans at you and rocks or whatever.
Was lying around.
Yeah. And that year, it was quite funny. Cole Hitchcock was going to give us pink bibs to wear because as photographers, we have to wear an identifying piece of clothing, and they make these bibs. And every year they change colors so that people can't
return with last year's.
And at the start of the year, they said, oh, we're thinking about giving you pink. And we're going, well, we won't wear it. Simple. Because we ain't wearing pink at Bathurst.
Mm.
And they go, why not? And we're going, think about it. Just like
a little bit of
Look, and I sympathise with them most times, but some photographers will stand in the same spot for half an hour. So the person that's paid the money to go to the race doesn't want to look at the back of someone's head for half an hour. All right. But I'll do during a race, I'll do two or three laps, maybe four or five. But generally I've got to get around, do as many different angles as I can. So I keep moving. And then, you know, sometimes you can't help it. You've just got to stay standing. I try to crouch down low, but most of us try to minimize how much we're interrupting the photographer. And that's the spectator. And that's important. I mean, the guys pay the money, right, and I understand. That said, the car that's going past us, it takes like 0.04 of a second to be from that side to that side.
So it's not that long that you're inconvenienced.
No.
Really, no. When you add up the total time frame.
When you think about it, yeah. You're not going to miss much.
When you explain it like that, it's very logical. Yeah. It's very logical.
Yeah.
Any bucket list motor racing events that you haven't got to photograph that you would have loved to, that you might still be able to if we can get some COVID clear and some planes flying and stuff like that?
F1 at Monaco.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Spa. I'd love to. Anything at Spa. Mm-hmm. F1 mainly, but I'd love to go to Spa. I've done Le Mans.
Mm-hmm.
I've done quite a few different Grand Prix. So I've done China, Malaysia, Singapore, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, Turkey. I'd like to do, I'd probably like to do Silverstone. And I'm not a turn left fan at all.
You've got to go to the 500.
I've got to do the 500.
You have to do
Yeah, seeing a car doing 500 kilometres an hour or whatever it is would be something special.
I can confirm you need to go.
Yeah.
You need to go. So whenever they allow people to
travel
to go
again.
Back there.
But, yeah, so I feel blessed to just be here at Bathurst actually this weekend.
Yeah. It's been a strange year. It's been nice to come back to a racetrack for the first round as we record this at the Repco Mount Panorama 500, which by the time this comes out, we'll have known who won, but we don't know right now because we're doing before it. So
I think I know.
Oh, do you?
Oh, Shane.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Let's see if this comes true.
Here's my guess for the season. Shane to whitewash it.
Same. I've chipped him for the season.
If he hasn't won the championship halfway through, I'll be surprised.
He's not going to win halfway through, Dirk.
Why not?
Well, there'll be too many points left on the table.
If he wins every race.
Yeah.
He's only got a tootle around, isn't he?
No.
When's
he ever tootled around?
That's a good point. how far into the season had Scott got where he almost sealed it?
Oh, a couple of years ago. What was he, two rounds to go?
Wasn't there a couple of races earlier where he could have sealed it?
Oh, I can't remember. But no, not that early. That was more than halfway.
Slide.
Come on now. Deal with particulars.
We'll add another 20%.
It's how it happens. Mate, we've covered some good ground today. I'm sure there's a million other stories that we didn't get to, but we might be able to do those down the track when you are fully retired from motorsport. Can we ever tempt you back? Would you come back and do a Bathurst 1000 or a one-off marquee event somewhere along the line?
I'll do one-off events. If someone rings me up and says I've got a job for you, and I'll weigh it up, and if it's worth it, then I'll do it. But I'm not doing the week in, week out.
Mm.
The year that I did 13 in a row is long gone.
Well, mixtures of supercar rounds, other events, and
there's supercars, Konicas, super tourers.
There's pro car rounds back in the day too,
and pro car, I think, something like that. So there was a lot of 13 rounds. My wife didn't know me. the bloke objected when I kicked him out. it's been a great ride, and I love taking photographs. I still love taking photographs of race cars and racing drivers. And today, walking around taking pictures of the setup, I still like it. I still like being creative and all the rest of it. There's just the other elements, and I'm too old. Yeah. So I don't want to be grumpy like Ray Berghaus.
It's kind of like having ice cream for tea all the time.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great thing.
Yeah.
But, and I'm sure for some of our listeners would give their left arm to work in the sport like we have for so long and like you have for so long and have the access to the people that we do. But there are elements of it that do get tiring. Travel, which obviously hasn't been that much of a problem the last 12 months for a lot of people, but and by no means are we complaining. It's just a case of you do something for long enough, no matter how great it is, you've done it to death. And, getting on a plane 13, 14, 15 times a year, being away from home, 60, 70 days, missing family events and all sorts of stuff, it adds up.
And, now that I'm retired and I'm telling people that I'm going, and when I put it up on my Facebook and the comments, it was incredibly humbling because I've never thought of myself as being something that people would look up to or achieve. And the number of comments saying that your contribution to motorsport, and I'm thinking, I've never thought of it that way.
I just clicked the button a few thousand times.
Yeah.
A few million, probably.
And,
billion.
Yeah.
Well, these days you can do a billion in a season.
Yeah. So I take 10,000 pictures at Bathurst.
Mm.
I took 20,000 one year.
It was a bad year, or you have an itchy finger? No,
I just started my website, and I shot every category, every car, and we put as many – we made sure that every single car that was on the track at that event went onto the website. And I got back to the media center, and it was 19,996.
So you went out and
– my wife, who was doing the computer work for me because I was too busy shooting, said, couldn't sarcastically, I might add – couldn't you have taken a 20,000? So I put the card in my camera, went outside, fired off four frames and gave it to her.
20 grand. Bang. Bang. That sounds like something you would do as well.
100%. Yeah.
Dirk, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for your, you just said it before, but your contribution to the sport. We're really stoked to have your photo archive, and we're going to be punching it out for many years to come with.
Thank you.
We're going to make GTP Magnus from the 90s be amazing, and sorts of categories and cars that people probably have forgotten about, as well as the big ticket stuff from supercars and Bathurst. And can you please get a waiver for me from Scott Dixon so he doesn't charge me if I ever use those in-car photos, please? I'm sure he doesn't need the bucks.
I was talking to him at the 12-hour last year, so I'm sure I can talk to him.
You can swing a deal. Good. I want all rights. I don't want just some. Dirk, thank you. A pleasure. Enjoy your last weekend at the mountain, and we will find a way to bring you back.
Yeah, and hopefully your listeners found this even remotely interesting.
Before we finish too quickly, if you are interested and you are a budding motorsport photographer and you'd love to be involved with Dirk and a bit of mentoring or be part of the group that you're talking about putting together, shoot us a Facebook note through V8 Sleuth or send us an email through the website and we can pass your details to Dirk and
That'd
put
be
you
fabulous.
In touch.
And I'd love to help someone get into the sport. I think it's they need it.
I thoroughly enjoyed that chat. I've known Dirk Kleinsmith for now pretty much the best part of 25 years, and it was great to go down memory lane at a time when there's probably a bit of emotion around as he headed into his last weekend, the Repco Mount Panorama 500 earlier in the year. I'm determined. I'm going to find a way to give him an assignment to do some shooting for Sleuth down the track somewhere, whether it's a car in a studio, a car at a racetrack. Dirk's work will not be lost to Australian motorsport, that's for sure. And as we talked about in the podcast, if you're interested in getting some lessons from him in motorsport photography, contact us and we'll pass you on. Head to our website, v8sleuth.com.au. There's a contact us email form page. Fill out your details there and send it to us and tell us that you're interested, and we'll forward it on to him, because I think that's a great thing that he's intending on doing, and it might just bring through the next generation of motorsport photographers. Don't forget, you can see a bunch of Dirk's amazing photos in our books that we've been publishing. They're on our website, bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au. Of course, you can subscribe to our newsletter through the V8 Sleuth website. Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, we're pretty busy on. You know where to find us. But yeah, some amazing Dirk photos over the years, and we've been thrilled to have his archive in our collection and being used in a lot of those books. So check them out online and grab yourself a copy of some of them over the journey. Anyway, I'm going to sign off. That's us done. Episode 100. We made it. How good's that? We'll join you next time for another episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Our next ep is Repco Supercars Weekly as we take a look at the Sandown Super Sprint. We'll chat to you then.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years, from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.